Okay.
I know some of you have heard me, because I've been in the rooms a long time, but for the past 10 years I was in relapse, so I wasn't doing a whole lot of talking. I'm going to kind of let my pictures do the talking, because you'll see from there where I started, where I got to, where I went back to, and where I am now. I've lost a total of 170 pounds, and I've lost, since relapse, another 120. So it's a total of 150, so that gives you an idea. I had gained 105 pounds in relapse. And I was trying to think about what to talk about today. It's all about commitment. And the food is obvious. I left the house today. I didn't know what I was going to be doing. I didn't know how long I would be here. And so I packed 2 snacks and a lunch, just in case, because I don't leave it up anymore to just in case, because just in case I might pick up something inappropriate for my lunch. I have to make sure that I have the things I need. My husband and I talk about it before I leave the house, the day before. He even said to me on Thursday, "You have a special something on Saturday. Do you need anything?" So he's a team player here, and I'm very, very blessed to have that. The food, I'm going to talk a little bit about the relapse, because I feel as if that's one of the gifts that I've been given, is to come away from that relapse. It started out very small. And you know the whole thing about denial, I truly didn't know that I was in relapse. I was struggling. I had slipped, because my binging before program was 2 larges, an entire bag of, a whole box of, a half gallon of, all of those things. It was the entire package. It wasn't a handful of, it wasn't an extra serving of, but that's what my relapse was about. My relapse was by the teaspoon and the tablespoon and by the handful, not the box of, not the sleeve of. I can't be in relapse. I didn't need 2 whole larges. I didn't need a half gallon of. I ate just 1 serving. It looked to me like it was okay, because it didn't look like it used to. And now a binge can be 2 pieces of, an extra cup of. So I've learned. I've learned to be far more careful. I've learned to be more aware. I've learned that my binge today looks far different. I can't compare it to what I used to do, because what I used to do was insane, and it got me to 354 pounds. And 1 tablespoon, 1 extra cup, 1 teaspoon at a time, I managed to get back up to 305 pounds. There's a gift in that relapse. So I was thinking about all about commitment, and I realized that there's a whole lot more to being in recovery than just the food. The food is really obvious, but it's the other things that I didn't know when I came into these rooms that I was going to have to look at and pay attention to and make changes to. At my bottom, I weighed 354 pounds. I wanted to commit suicide. I had a suicide plan in place, but my house was trashed. My house was, everybody always says, "Oh, I have issues with clutter." It's beyond clutter. It was trashed. There was a path from the front door to the bedroom, and then there was a path that led off of that to the bathroom. Everything else was covered in crap. It wasn't worthwhile. It's not like I was hoarding. I just wasn't cleaning. At 354 pounds, there's not a whole lot of movement. I was isolating. I had clothespins on the curtains so you couldn't see in. I didn't want anybody to accidentally see the way I was living. If you had asked me how I am, I'd say, "I'm fine. I'm fine." I wasn't fine. And it wasn't until after I came into program and I had to do step one, I was powerless over food. Yeah, I got that. I'm 354 pounds. I know I'm powerless over food. And my life had become unmanageable. My life's not unmanageable. I go to work. I support myself. It was unmanageable. And that's when I started to look at the way I was living. Now, at one point, my house was trashed. I wouldn't let anybody in, not even my sister. She came to the house one day, and I hid behind the door so she wouldn't think I was home. Bless you. And then There came a day when they wanted to work on the gas on our street, the natural gas, and they turned off the gas to everybody's house. The street was only a block long, but still. And they weren't going to turn it back on until you let them in to check the pilot lights. No one is going to see my house this way. So I didn't let them in. I lived for 2 winters, from one winter to the next winter, without gas. That meant no heat, no hot water, no cooking on the stove. I had to use a microwave for anything I wanted to do. Insane. Insane. In the middle of summer, it's not so bad. I lived in Florida. It's okay. A cool shower. Not exactly cold, but pretty cool. Then there was, you can sit there, have a seat. I'll sit somewhere else. Don't drink my coffee. Then we'll have trouble. So I went through 2 winters, and you say, well, it was Florida. Well, it was northern Florida, and it snowed both winters. It was cold. I slept in an Arctic-rated sleeping bag. I bought a little bitty space heater, which I was afraid to use because of all the trash around. I was afraid I might light the house on fire. I did crazy things. I would heat up a bowl of water in the microwave so that I could take like a French bath or a spit bath, whatever you want to call it. And I could do that, but then at one point I was actually making up excuses to go to my parents' house and I'd do a shower. Also, toward the end of this insane life, the second winter, I've actually joined a gym and I'm showering every other day at the gym. I still haven't cleaned up the house, but I hit my bottom at this point. In 1995, my mother's dying of cancer. My house is trashed. I'm 354 pounds. I hate the way I live. I hate everything about my life, and I want to die. But I wasn't willing to kill myself as long as the house was messy, because no one is going to see this house. I kid you not, it was that bad. But thank God, procrastination made me live. So eventually my mother passes away. I had, before then I had decided, I'm sitting on my bed and I'm sobbing my eyes out, and I just said, I hate my life, I hate where I live, I hate everything. So I decided I was going to move. I was going to lose weight. I called a weigh and pay place. I did lose weight, and then I gained it all back, plus a little bit more. And then I joined a gym. I called and joined a ladies only gym, and I called just my size and ordered some workout clothes because I didn't have anything. I made a nail appointment because I hated my nails too. I changed as everything I could think of, and eventually I did get the house cleaned up. I sold it. I moved. That's how I'm here. When people ask, how did you end up in New Jersey, I give them the short version. Midlife crisis. I don't tell them all of this stuff because it's crazy. I never did get the gas turned back on. I just waited until I sold the house. And I moved everything out. To give you an idea how much there was, I used to have a little Nissan truck. I moved 2,000 pounds of crap out of my house. 2,000 pounds. You know how I know that? Because when you drive into the dump, they weigh your truck, and when you drive out, they weigh it again, and they give you a slip of paper. I had so many slips of paper, one day I was curious. I added them all up, came to just over 1 ton of crap, and that's where my relapse can take me. So, another area that my life was in is I live in fantasy. While I'm living in this house at 354 pounds, I'm fantasizing about being an Olympic skater. And by the way, I do get the gold every time. I fantasize about being a world-famous author, prolific author. I fantasize about being singer and songwriter. I fantasize any way of escaping I can. I can mentally just take myself out. I'm living in crap in my mind. It's a mansion. But I'm also very generous with people, so I keep it small because I'm humble that way in my mind. It's crazy, but I lived in fantasy. I also escaped into TV, books, computers. One summer, I used to teach school, so for 2 months, I did nothing but read. And people will say, oh, reading's okay. Yes, but I didn't bathe. I didn't necessarily change clothes. I didn't necessarily get out of bed. I read. I could read 2 or 3 books in a day. I just read constantly. Why? Because it's an escape. I don't like my mind, but I can block it all off. I don't like my world, I mean. But I can block it all off with a book. It's only this big, and I live in those pages. So it's another form of it. I could watch TV for hours and hours and hours and hours and hours and do nothing else. And God help the VCR, I'd just wear it out. And then the computer came along, and I dumped those things, and I got into online chatting. I talked to people all over the world, and it was this, it's a mental fantasy. Talking to people I had never met. I actually did end up meeting some of them. But it was just, you know, I'd tell people, I talked to a guy in Antarctica, isn't that cool? And they're looking at me like, what are you doing? They'd say, that's great. But it was all night. I could talk to people in Australia. They're asleep when they're supposed to be. I'm up online talking. And actually, that turned out pretty good because I did meet my husband online. And I can shop to death online. I know how to work a computer. The other thing in my depths, and this I found out through relapse, and this was the gift of relapse, is I believed that I am my weight. My weight was this giant umbrella that cast a shadow over everything else in my life. I am not worthy. I am broken. This gets me all tied up because this is fairly new for me to not believe these things. I need to be fixed. And I got all this. I get it. I did a year and a half of therapy, which was part of what I needed to come out of relapse, to find out where these thoughts came from. The shame, the guilt. If I ate, I was guilty. If I ate, I was shame-filled. I was ashamed of just being who I was. At 354 pounds, I felt totally worthless. And I felt that it was something that my parents were ashamed of, or at least my mother. My mother, in all of her good heart, tried to help. Kim, I'm so worried about you. My God, child, I'm so worried about you. Look, you just keep gaining weight. I'm going to take you to a special doctor. At 10, I was on a diet. She would make my lunches, and I would bring, you know, tuna with French dressing on it because that was the low-fat thing to eat, or diet Jell-O. Foods that I swore I'd never eat again. But she was trying out of her best to make me better. But what I saw was, I'm screwed up, I'm broken, I'm not worthy, I need to be fixed. She took me to a special doctor at the age of 12. She took me to a doctor, someone to help with the weight. And that didn't work. You know, my sisters weren't being taken to special doctors for this stuff. So these are the messages I got. And what I internalized, I didn't see she's trying to help. What I saw was, I'm broken. Well, I have learned things in recovery that are different. I have learned that I can keep my house. This is where the commitment comes in. My house is always company ready within an hour. I don't live a neat freak, but if I know somebody's coming over, I can get that house ready for company in an hour, and that's my standard today. When I start to see a hot spot happening, you know that counter in the kitchen that starts to pile up? Mm-hmm. Today, I try to be diligent, and I try to take care of it before it gets out of control, because it can become just throw it in the extra room and close the door till the extra room can't hold anymore. Aha! People have been to that house. Because the next thing you know, it's not just the extra room, it's also my bedroom, and close that door. And of course, the basement. And all, you know. And I have to be very careful. There was one time with my husband, when I moved in with my husband, and there was that one room that was just a mess, and I said, I really want to get it cleaned up. And I said, don't stop me now. It took me this long to get started. Luckily, we did leave. He proposed to me. That room stayed messy for about 4 more weeks. But today I live differently. I keep the house clean. I have cleaning ladies that come over, so every 2 weeks I have to get the house cleaned. Believe it or not, it's a good tool. It's a great tool. Everything gets put away. It may sit out, but it's okay. So today I live differently, and I keep track of it. And you know why? Because I'm worth it. I used to stay neat for roommates. After I moved to New Jersey, I lived with two ladies. By the way, one was in OA, the other was in AA. It was the best. It was like living in a rehab, and the lady from OA is the one who brought me into these rooms, and I'm very grateful for that. But I would always keep the rest of the house clean. My room would get messy, and so finally someone said, "Why is it important? Why is it more important that you keep it clean for them and not you?" So today I keep it clean for my husband and for me. When I find myself going into fantasy, on the way here I was listening to Queen, and I always go into, I'm there. By the way, I'm on American Idol. Yes. When I listen to Queen, I'm on American Idol. But I know this about myself now, and I catch myself and I say, okay, you've been in fantasy too long. It's okay when I'm in the car listening to music, but it's not okay when I'm in my own house. It's not okay when I start to use that to escape. It's not okay when I don't want to think about whatever's causing me pain or discomfort. When those emotions come up now, I catch myself. Ah, you've escaped again. Come back and see what you were feeling and get back into reality. So it's not that I don't do these behaviors, but I'm much more aware of them and I keep it limited. I use it now as a signal. It's okay, though, if you're listening to Queen. I limit the amount of playbooks that I read. I limit the amount of trashy little romances that I read. And if I read one of those, then I need to also read something more of a self-help or spiritual, or keep one going all the time. When I find myself not wanting to pick up those books and just wanting to pick up Nora Roberts, then I know I'm in trouble. I can have a Nora Roberts or two, but then I need to come back over here and have the spiritual books and have the books that help me to bring my thinking back into reality. So, but when I keep wanting to go toward, poor Nora, she's getting such a bad reputation. When I want to go back to Nora Roberts or some other kind of, you know, 50 Shades of whatever, I know that I'm in trouble and I need to come back. And the beliefs in therapy, and this is what I believe is the gift of my relapse. I do, however, suggest that you don't wait 10 years to figure it out. I spent 10 years gaining weight. It's only 10 pounds. It's only 10 pounds. Big deal. I lost 150. It's only 10 pounds. And then the next year, it's only 10 pounds. This was all part of the denial. 10 years later, it was 105 pounds. But in the meantime, I'm catching on that I'm in trouble. By the time I'd gained 30 pounds, 40 pounds, I knew I was in trouble. And I tried different things. I figured, well, it must be spiritual. Because if I were spiritually fit, this would not be an issue. I worked on so many different things, and I tried so many different things. The only thing that worked was not quitting. That's the only thing that worked. I don't know what made the switch flip. I went to therapy because there was this big ball of pain located just below my belly button. Big black pit of pain, and I couldn't figure out what it was. I couldn't figure out why, when my life was better than it's ever been, I was so unhappy. There was always this underlying unhappiness coming up. And being in relapse, I got desperate and I finally said, I need professional help. I don't know what's going on. And so I went to a therapist. And we worked it out. I did a writing one day. Bob Green was on Oprah, and he said, "What is your story? What is keeping you stuck?" And I wrote about that. I pulled out a book, and I started writing. And I said, my story is that I wasn't wanted. I came along at a time when my parents were broke. They were in school, working multiple jobs just to keep things fed, keep things going. Oops, sorry about that. And they were living in a basement, and I came along, and I was just another mouth to feed. And at that moment, I got nauseous. I had a huge pain in my head. I got sobbing, just racks of sobs. So I know that that kind of reaction, that was not a fantasy. It's the belief that I had. Whether it was true or not doesn't matter. It's the belief that I had. And I wrote, I am not a mouth to feed, but I lived most of my life as if that's what I was. My whole job in life was to food, alcohol, pills, whatever I could put in my mouth. And when that was the beginning of turning something around. And I started to realize, one of the things I did, I need to change my thinking, because I believed I wasn't worthy, and I believed that I was broken and needed to be fixed. My husband loved me 105 pounds later. He still loved me. And I realized my friends still loved me. You know, I've heard people say, oh, I got into relapse and all the OA people just vanished. Well, that didn't happen to me. They stuck around. They stayed with me. They loved me anyway. My husband loved me anyway. I got a job at 300 pounds. I didn't think I could get a job. Nobody would hire me at 300 pounds. This is the way I was thinking, because my weight determined everything about me. I got hired even though I was heavy, and people invited me to sit with them at lunchtime even though I was heavy. And so eventually I started looking at the evidence. So when I had that voice that said, you're not worthy, you're broken, what's wrong with you? I said, absolutely nothing. By the way, I got a job at 300 pounds. Did you know that? I start talking back to myself. My husband loves me. What do you mean I'm not worthy? I am worthy. I'm worthy simply because I breathe. I'm worthy simply because I stand here. I am worthy because I am worthy. And every time those tapes play, and they still do play, I talk back. I examine them. I have to be aware. This is where I think meditation comes in really handy for me, because I have to sit and listen. And now it makes me far more aware of the garbage that can float through my head. I can take the garbage out of my house a whole lot easier than I could take the garbage out of my head. So today, I pay attention. And when negative crap, when thoughts make me feel bad, I show evidence, because I'm kind of scientific in that way. I need the evidence. So I have the evidence now. I am worthy. I am lovable. I am worthwhile. I don't need to be fixed. I can always improve, but I don't need to be fixed because I'm not broken. There was a sign at a retreat years ago that said, take contrary action. And I have found that to be very, very helpful. When let's say I want to isolate, pick up the phone and call someone, Kim, take contrary action. Do the opposite of what you would normally do. If I want to gossip, keep my mouth shut. Oh, God, that's hard. But I do it. I keep my mouth shut. I have all kinds of conversations in my head, but they don't have to come out of my mouth. And I loved what our introduction said, reality is perception. Because when I perceived myself as unworthy, I was unworthy. When I perceived myself as worthwhile, I'm worthwhile. The only thing that changed is the tape in my head. On the inside of my medicine cabinet, I painted it with whiteboard paint, so every morning and every night when I brush my teeth, I see I am worthy, I make good choices, I choose love, I choose health. And there's something else, which I can't think in the pressure. On the other side, it says disconnectare, or something, and it means disconnect yourself from those things that keep you from being your true self. And then it also says, I lose weight quickly and easily, reach and maintain my healthiest body size. I have all these positive things, and I see them twice a day. Because if I don't shove positive things in my head, the garbage starts to build up, just like it can on that kitchen counter. So these are the things that I try to be committed about. I keep the positive stuff in my head, and I try to always say, okay, that's what you did when you were unhappy. This is what we do in recovery. That's the way you behaved in relapse. This is how we behave now. It even worked in dating, and this will be my last story. I always dated guys that were tall and wide, and they made me feel small because they were bigger. They had to be bigger than me. Mm-hmm. And they had to be very loud and outgoing, because I thought that was confident. Well, all those guys weren't really working out so well. I did a lot of serial dating at one point. One wrong person after the other. They weren't wrong, but they were wrong for me. And then I started dating people that I wasn't attracted to. My husband is small, 135 pounds, 5'4", same height as me, and he's quiet and he's confident in a self-assured, quiet, steady way. And so when I first met him, I said, well, he's really different. So I'll go out with him because I'm taking contrary action. Because what I discovered were those big, loud guys were arrogant, and they were just not what I was needing. And I can't imagine a better fellow for me. But if I had only looked for what I was used to, I would have never found him. And I would have missed out on something absolutely wonderful. So taking contrary action in my relationships, in my food. Believe me, I would have never packed my food before. It would have been, where can we go? Let's get something really good. I have something really good because it makes me feel good about myself. There will be no guilt, no shame, no remorse, and I'm going to feel healthier when the whole day is done. So thank you so much for letting me speak tonight, today. How the time went.
Did you want to?